Thank you for tuning in to
Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on family matters. Mask, mothers and fathers, align saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages, for all mental health issues, including school issues and addictions. If you know somebody that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, if they want a school program, we have therapists that actually go to the schools and present in the schools on different topics. Bullying is one big one in the elementary schools right now. So if you want to bring a therapist to your child's school, please give us a call. Our confidential anonymous number is, meaning you can call anonymously, 718-758-0400. Again, I will repeat the number in case you want to write it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, someone you sit next to, usually at shul. Our number, 718-758-0400. So tonight, I am very honored to have on with me Dr. Chaya Liba Kobernick, who is a licensed clinical psychologist. And she specializes in DBT. She's really passionate about bringing evidence-based treatments to the from community and improving treatments that work, access to treatments that work. She also provides mindfulness coaching, and she consults to schools and organizations such as MASK. She's a DBT specialist for teens and children, but she also works with adults. I would like to welcome on tonight Dr. Chaya Liba Kobernick. Thank you for making the time, for being on this evening. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much for inviting me to chat with you today. I've heard of the incredible work that MASK does for years, and I'm just really grateful to have an organization like this in our community.
So, Dr. Kobernick, I'm very excited to have you on because I really want our listeners to know about DBT. There are so many different modalities for therapy, and I really would like you to talk about what is DBT, and we'll just have a discussion about it, please. So what is DBT?
Sure, sure. So... Yeah, DBT is certainly becoming more and more of a popular term these days in the therapy world, and so I'm excited to get to talk with you about it. It's really a groundbreaking treatment approach that literally saves lives. So just an introduction, DBT stands for dialectical behavior therapy. So it's a kind of therapy. The style of therapy is cognitive behavioral, or a heavy focus on behavioral. And what that means is that the way that we address distress or whatever the person's coming in with is through targeting thoughts and feelings. So that's what it means, that it's a kind of cognitive behavioral therapy. And then what DBT adds over and above traditional CBTs is this dialectical piece. dialectics. So often when clients first hear the term dialectics, they think maybe it has something to do with dialect or something. But really, it's a philosophy that stresses the idea of multiple truths, that there's always multiple truths existing at any given time. I usually give examples like, I love my mom and I hate my mom. My therapist helps me a lot and she pushes me really hard. School is really fun and school is really stressful. So these are just examples of dialectics. And the most important, or the one that we stress the most in DBT, is acceptance and change. So everything in DBT is balanced between acceptance and change.
So CBT helps clients recognize changing problematic patterns or thinking or behaving. And DBT is saying is the clients regulate their intense emotions or, you know, their relationships through validation and accepting these behaviors. Now, when would somebody recommend, preferably to a teenager, a young person, DBT, and when would they recommend CBT? What would be the reason you would recommend one or the other? Is it first accept and then, you know, I mean, first recognize what it is, name it, and then accept it, or what?
Sure. So CBT is often used as an umbrella term for a lot of different types of treatments. People might even consider DBT as a third wave or a type of CBT. But general traditional CBT is very effective for anxiety and depression. And the like more nuanced adaptations like DBT target particular things. So DBT particularly targets dysfunction in emotion regulation. What that means is, that's just a bunch of words, that mean when our ability to manage or to regulate or to do something with our emotional experiences is really chronically getting disrupted or being really challenging for us to deal with, that's when somebody might be a good candidate for DBT. I like to talk through the model that DBT uses to understand clients. It's called the biosocial model. And the biosocial model, creative name, it's got a social piece and a bio piece. So the bio piece is basically that some people are born with an emotional vulnerability or an emotional intensity that other people are not born with. So, for example, these people might wake up in the morning at an emotional intensity of like a 50, whereas other people are waking up in the morning at like a 0 or a 5. And if you're waking up at like a 0 or a 5 and then like you miss your alarm and you spill your coffee on yourself and you're running late for work and then you're pretty upset and you're pretty stressed out and you're at a 50 of emotion, you can kind of manage and use some standard coping skills that you've developed through your life to manage that. But if you're waking up at a 50, it's really, and then all those things happen, you end up at 100. And at 100, it's really hard to do very much with those emotions because you're in just so much pain. And when you're in so much pain, all you want to do is just make it stop. It's like having your hand on a hot plate or a hand on a burner, and all you're going to do when you have an automatic reflex to take your hand off. So that's typically the biological side of clients who are coming in for DBT or who benefit from DBT. And then the social piece is that you take these biologically emotionally intense people and you put them in an environment that says, whoa, you are so emotionally intense. Chill out. What's wrong with you? Calm down. Get over it. Stop it. Those are sentences that very often are chronically said to people with this emotional intensity. And over time, what happens is that those people then learn to push down, ignore, shove away their emotions, right? If you're being told stop it by the people you trust the most, well, then you're going to try to stop it. But if you don't have any developed skills for managing that, then what's going to happen is it's going to escalate and explode eventually. So you end up with this, like, shove, 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 explode kind of pattern that we end up in. And I would also just say that, that CBT versus DBT, DBT is a very comprehensive treatment with a lot of pieces to it, and it really, really works for the people who need it. Not everybody needs it. So I think that's another important piece.
Right, and I know, you know, we, the questions that I'm asking you, because clients ask MASC about them, and we give them those answers. We at MASC understand it. We learn about it. We, you know, my staff is trained in all the modalities to understand which one would be effective for which kinds of families, issues that they're struggling with. So I'm going to ask some of the questions that some of the parents sent in to me so that they can get their answers. What is the hardest personality disorder to treat?
Antisocial personality disorder. what I think you want me to say, borderline personality disorder, is very often associated with DBT. Many people who benefit from DBT have borderline personality disorder, but not all do, certainly, because that's a diagnosis that just kind of came along with the initial research on DBT. And people who struggle with emotion dysregulation very often also have borderline personality disorder. That said, borderline personality disorder is extremely treatable. It's a very difficult set of symptoms to struggle with, absolutely. And anybody who has a family member with borderline personality disorder or a loved one with borderline personality disorder will say it's not a walk in the park. And these people really do get better. It's very, very treatable.
Right. So some of the questions that were given to me prior to the show is DBT good for anxiety, depression, and what are the skills that are taught when learning DBT? If you can share some, please.
Sure. So DBT happens to be one of the, and I think the reason it's gotten so popular over time is because it is one of the, I would say it's probably the most well-researched treatment that exists in psychotherapy at this point. There's just so much research on it. And so people are constantly checking things like, well, is DBT effective for anxiety? Is it effective for depression? And it definitely is. What I usually say is when somebody comes into me with depression or anxiety, they might not need full DBT in order to get better. Very often what I end up recommending is DBT skills group, which is not the same thing as DBT. DBT is a very comprehensive treatment that includes four modes of treatment. It includes individual DBT, which is a certain style of therapy. Okay. It includes DBT skills group, which I'll tell you about. It includes phone coaching, which is between sessions, helping with generalizing skills, learning to catch problems before they escalate so we can actually be skillful as the problems escalate rather than once it's already a crisis, and maintaining the relationship because relationships are so important when working with people who are struggling with their emotions, so making sure that the relationship stays strong between therapist and client. And then the fourth mode of the treatment is consultation team for the therapist. DBT therapists have to be on a consultation team, and if they're not, then that's a part that's missing from the treatment for the client, and you'll feel it. So just to talk about skills group more, very often people associate DBT with skills, and because of that, a really important study came out a couple years ago on skills alone. And what it showed is that skills alone is very effective. It's not the same as comprehensive DBT, and it can be very effective, especially when somebody is struggling with something like anxiety or depression. DBT skills as a complement to individual therapy can be really, really helpful. And that's what I see very often in my practice is we have people who come to us who are in individual therapy and they're just kind of a little bit stuck, and adding in skills group really makes a big difference. So I think you asked what are the sets of skills, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so there are four sets of skills in DBT. One is mindfulness, and mindfulness is our core skill. Without mindfulness, you can't do anything else. You can't be skillful with anything else. So we always come back to that. Interpersonal effectiveness, which is one of our change skills. How do we actually be more interpersonally effective? Emotion regulation, which is our skills for how to manage and deal well with emotions. And distress tolerance, which is another one of our acceptance skills, which help us in the moment of distress. When we're at that 100 of emotion, how do we tolerate that intensity of emotional pain without making life worse? So those are our four sets of skills. When you do family group, there's another set of skills called walking the middle path skills, which help with like family conflicts and things like that.
So you mentioned phone coaching. Let's speak about that a little bit. How does that work?
Sure, yeah. So phone coaching is a very important part of DBT, and there's a few different functions for phone coaching. I would say one of the functions is relationship, because I think as Marsha Linehan, the creator of DBT, or as we say in my family, the Rabbanit, says that waiting a week between sessions to discuss something that upset you in session is an arbitrary punishment. So we don't make clients have arbitrary punishments. Only purposeful punishments, I'm kidding. So they can reach out if something upset them in session or something was difficult or something's frustrating them that they're still thinking about. We want them to reach out. Don't wait the whole week. That's one part of it. Another part of it is very often clients are not, or people in general, are not given the attention that they need until they're in a crisis. Everything's like, just calm down, get over it, relax, what's your problem? Until it's a crisis, and then everybody's there, everybody's loving, everybody's caring, and everybody's attentive. Well, we don't want that happening. We want to give you a lot of attention when you're skillful, or way before the crisis happens. And when we're doing that, that actually, over time, makes clients, it just improve drastically, just that by itself. And the other part is helping clients generalize skills. I say, like, I'm like, imagine, and I hate giving this metaphor because I don't know anything about sports, but if I was your basketball coach, and I would show up to every practice, teach you everything you need to know, but I wouldn't show up to the game, that'd be a little strange, right? I need to show up to the game. So if I'm your therapist, I need to be there for the game called your actual life. So moment to moment, you know, in the moment when somebody's struggling and they want to be skillful and they're not sure how, they reach out. And calls are usually between 5 and 10 minutes. It's not therapy over the phone. It's very targeted, but it really leads to big, big changes.
So when would, one of the questions that I received is, when would somebody know if they would benefit from DBT?
I think anybody whose particular set of struggles are, I don't care about the diagnosis per se. If you're struggling with managing your emotions feel overwhelming to you and you don't really know what to do, how to make sense or what to do with them, that tells me that you're going to benefit from this treatment, usually, like 99% of the time. That and just that sentence is enough to kind of give me a clue that we're in the right zone.
And today there's so much talk about mindfulness. Can you explain what mindfulness is and what is it part of in DBT, please?
Absolutely. So mindfulness is another one of those buzzwords these days. In DBT, so Marsha Linehan was actually the first to put mindfulness into a psychotherapy. And she was practicing mindfulness on her own, and she was very aware that it would be extremely helpful to her clients, but she was working with people who were really struggling, clients who really had a lot of problems going on. So to ask them to sit and do these practices would really be a little bit like not so realistic. So she broke it down into specific skills of what skills do you need in order to practice mindfulness. Mindfulness just means present moment awareness, non-judgmentally. And so in DBT, we talk about mindfulness skills, what they are, and we practice mindfulness every group. And those things can range from more of like a meditation where you're observing your breath quietly, you know, attending to your breath, but also noticing when your mind wanders other places and coming back to that breath over and over, okay? But it can also be playing a game as a group and being fully participating in that game, doing exactly what's needed, not judging yourself, your co-leaders maybe for being a little silly, and just being able to throw yourself completely into the moment. That is mindfulness as well.
And what about people that are struggling with trauma? How does DBT address
that? Yeah, great question. So DBT is not a trauma treatment, and very often clients coming in for DBT eventually will need trauma work. There's usually trauma as a piece of the picture. We talked in the beginning about that, like, chronic invalidation or that invalidating environment. If somebody's living in this chronically invalidating environment, there's going to be some trauma to work through. And in DBT, so we talked about the number 4 a lot, right? There was 4 sets of skills, 4 modes of treatment, and 4 stages of DBT. And what people think of as DBT is typically stage 1, but there are really 4 stages of treatment. And the second stage is where we focus on trauma. That said, DBT itself does not do, I would say, like a fantastic job of teaching its clinicians how to treat trauma exactly. And so that's where other evidence-based modalities become really important. Prolonged exposure, cognitive processing therapy are some of the most strongly recommended treatments for trauma, and incorporating those when people have kind of moved past that those stage 1 targets. Stage 1, we say it's kind of like being in the basement or like being of a house, like, and you're kind of in a process of climbing up, or really being in Gehenna. It's really the lowest like place of emotional pain. And as we climb out through that, we get to a place where we're able to start doing that trauma work. And so then incorporating other modalities to do that trauma work can become really important. There has been research on incorporating prolonged exposure into DBT, and so that's often a good approach to go with. But yeah.
Got it. So one of the questions is, what is DBT for teens and children like?
Oh, sure. So DBT was originally created for adults. When it was adapted for children, they added the Walking the Middle Path module of skills. And those are skills to help, families understand each other and navigate family conflict. So that's also in the teen part. And teens attend group with their parents. So it's a multi-family group. So in our groups, we have a bunch of different families come together for the group. So that's a really nice piece there. For children, it's a really different approach. There's a heavy emphasis on parent work and on parent commitment to the treatment and to doing really counterintuitive strategies for completely changing how the home functions. So it becomes super validating, but also really easy for the child to become skillful slowly, eventually on their own. And eventually with the help of the therapist as well and teaching them these skills and working with them. But that work becomes so much easier after we focus so much on making the home what we call a change-ready environment. So that's where a lot of the work is at in DBT for children.
Right. Now, your groups are amazing. You want to talk about, in general, what kind of clients you see? And before we sign off, tell me a little bit about your groups.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so I am really fortunate to get to offer DBT skills groups for from clients. It's not really something that exists to the caliber that we're offering it. And our groups, we have single gender groups, we have a multi-family group for from girls, and what's unique about that is that DBT, as I hope you've heard, has hashkafic overlays. The idea that there's multiple truths there's not multiple truths. There's one Hashem, there's one Torah. And we understand that in this world there are multiple truths, and that's how Hashem made it, that this world has these multiple lenses to be able to see something through. So to be able to provide a space that can be hashgafically appropriate, and just appropriate in a few different ways, is really rewarding. So very often I'm seeing clients who are from but also struggling with these same issues, like I mentioned, with emotions and feeling their emotions are really big or really out of control. And then they come to us and they're really able to benefit from those skills groups, benefit from the treatment in general, and major changes are made, which is really a privilege to get to be part of.
Right. Dr. Chaya Leiber-Kopenick, thank you so much for being on with us tonight. And anyone that wants to reach Dr. Kopenick and wants to participate possibly in the groups, feel free to call MASC, and we will have Dr. Kopenick call you back. Thank you. It's really an honor to have you on. Thank you very much for being on tonight.
Thank you for your time, yeah.
I would like to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually for now, hug tight. Please remember, go online, maskparents.org. You can listen to previous shows, and please be our partner and donate online so we could continue with these important shows and all our programs in the schools and in the community. So please, again, maskparents.org, make your donation. If you would like to sponsor a group in memory of somebody, in honor of somebody, for someone's birthday, for a Fush Lema, please call the MASC helpline, 718-758-0400. Tonight's show is in memory of Simcha Shmuel Ben Moshe. Thank you, and have a good night.
Did you ever consider hosting your own radio or television show? We can help you get on the air. Talkline Communications works with broadcasters as well as with TV and radio stations in New York and nationwide that lease time, all at competitive rates. We work with doctors, lawyers, and other professionals, as well as with ethnic broadcasters. For more information about hosting your own radio or TV show, please call 212-769-1925. 212-769-1925. And out of New York, call 1-866-MY-TV-SHOW. That's 1-866-MY-TV-SHOW.